Okay, we're going to start the top of Kuf Ayin Aleph Amud Aleph. Yesterday we left off with the answer that Rav Huna gave to Rav Nachman about why is it that Rav still agrees with Rav Yehuda, even after we know that Rav Yehuda in the Braisa says that when you rewrite the Shtah, you write it Mizman HaRishon. Nevertheless, he still argues with him. Why does he still argue with him? Because Rav Yehuda only requires that it be done by Edim, whereas Rav requires it be done by Beis Din. And that was the last line at the top of Kuf Ayin Aleph Amud Aleph that we discussed yesterday, which is that a Beis Din has the power to create a backdated shtar, a predated shtar, because they have Hefker, Beis Din, Hefker. They're empowered. They will not set a standard or an example for anybody else because they are a unique body and a unique expression of the ability to remake or redistribute wealth. On the other hand, when we're talking about the Edim, right, then if you allow them to all of a sudden backdate shtarot and predate the shtar, that opens up, right, a very Pandora's box in terms of what Vedim can do now, and that many people might come to be machshir predated shtarot. So when it says, can't do that, Rav still disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda, it's Beis Din, and only Beis Din can do it, and they write it to the original shtar's date. So when it says, well, is that really true that you can't have these Edim write or backdate the shtarot? V'amar Yehuda Marav, Edim kotvin afilu asarat shtarot osadeh achat. That Edim can write 10 shtarot even on a single field. So if they can write 10 shtarot on a single field, sounds like we don't have a problem with the Edim backdating the shtar. The assumption is obviously they didn't write all 10 of them at once, right on the field. But if they're writing multiple shtarot to evidence or to discuss, prove the transaction that took place, if that transaction was static, it happened at one point, and yet they're writing multiple shtarot on it. So that we don't have a problem. Rav Yosef Amar Bishtar Matana. Bishtar Matana, there's no problem with this type of with these types of issues. Or Rabba Amar Bishtar Shein Bo Achrayut. Or the other possibility is that we're talking about a Shtar Mechira, which is a Shtar Mechira that does not have recourse, has no Achrayut in it. Because in these two cases, the ability or the predating of the Shtar will not have any impact on the buyer subsequent to this transaction. Because a matana does not have recourse in it, and a mechira without recourse also obviously doesn't have recourse in it. You don't have recourse, we don't mind anymore, because you have the dating of the shtar is going to be irrelevant with regards to other parties who purchased the property after you. You can't go back and hurt them in any way if it's misdated or if it's changed in any way, because you have no rights. The only right you have is that the transaction took place. Other than that right, you have no, and if we give you more and more documents that evidence that you were granted a gift, fine. That's fine. You were granted a gift. Or we have many contracts to evidence that you bought the property, very good. You did buy the property, and there's nothing wrong with writing that. The problem only comes is when we empower you through that with recourse to go and affect other parties. So here where you're missing that piece, we don't mind that you wrote multiple contracts. So now the Gemara says, my braiso. Before, Rav Nachman quoted, or his Rabbi Yirmiya, Rabbi quoted a brisa about Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, and we got a sliver of that brisa, which is Rabbi Yehuda thinks that you do it right. Yeah, that you did it mizman rishon. The Gemara said, "Tanya edim mekarim teshtar v'kodim l'shtar acher mizman rishon." That's a quote out of a brisa. The Gemara goes, "Where's this full brisa?" The Tanya, we have the brisa. Hare shehayu noshin bo elef zuz. Let's say he was a creditor. He was they owed him 1,000 zuz. Upar mehen chamesh meot, and they were paid off. He paid off 500 out of the 1,000. So here's a creditor coming after him for 1,000 zuz. He says, listen, I don't want the whole thing. I'll give you 500 of it. It's a edim mekarim et hashtar. The edim rip up the original shtar. V'kotim lo shtar acher mizman ha-rishon. Read him a new document with the original date in it, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So first of all, here you have the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Number one, that it's mizman ha-rishon. And number two is that it's the edim that are doing it. Right? This is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi Omer, is Rabbi Yossi in our Mishnah who says that you give him a shovar, you give him a receipt. Shtar zeye munach bimkomo. We don't touch the original shtar. V'yichtavu shovar. And write a receipt for him. He says, I'm going to tell you why we write a receipt and we don't rip up the original document. For two reasons. One is, achat kedei sheikof leporo. Number one is, it keeps pressure on the debtor to pay the money back, because he has a fear of losing the receipt. If he loses the receipt, he's now going to owe 1,000 zuz again instead of 500 zuz. So he thinks, let me get this paid back quickly as possible so I don't have to keep holding on to this receipt. So there's a certain amount of unspoken pressure that is kept on the debtor to repay the debt. So therefore we say, do it that way, so he doesn't think that he's now free and he can, you know, take his time and pay it back. No, he owes the money. He's got to pay it back. That's one reason. And sheni, the achat is kadei shigveh mizman harishon. Rabbi says, so that he can also collect from the first date. If we rip up the shtar, right, then, and we redate it to today, you've now abrogated the rights of the creditor because he's lost the lien from the original date, and now you're dating it as of today. So that's the negative. So you, Rabbi Huda, wants to say rip up the shtar, right, that hurts the creditor. But wait a minute.
So,
where did he see that? Rabbi Huda clearly said, you can write it from the first date. So where did Rabbi Yosef get this? He's arguing on Rabbi Huda on 2 points, and one of the points is not even a valid point. Right? He never said such a thing. So he says, "Vah, Rabbi Huda, now mizman rishon kamar." And Rabbi Huda also said the mizman rishon. What is Rabbi Yosi trying to say over here? So hachi kamar le. Rabbi Yosi says this to Rabbi Huda. I mizman rishon kamar. If you said that the edim rewrite the shtar and write it from mizman rishon, peligna alacha bechado. I argue with you on the one point. The one point being, it keeps pressure on the debtor to pay back. If you said from the second date, then I argue with you on both points. Number one is that you have to date the shtar from the zman rishon. We don't want to lose that. And number two is that we keep pressure on the debtor. What you do see from here is that the brisa that we just quoted, the brisa is not written like the way we have it. The Gemara is interpreting what Rabbi Yehuda's position is, right, in the brisa. The brisa really said, right, mekarin lecha shtar v'kotlin shtar acher, period. The addition of mizman rishon is an addition of the Gemara, an interpretation of the Gemara in Rabbi Yehuda. Once we know later on, that's the position of Rabbi Yehuda. But from Rabbi Yossi never heard that from Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi just heard from Yehuda, rip up the shtar, write a new shtar. So now, going back to our Mishnah, when we said before that Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah is ambiguous, we don't know what he says. We see even Rabbi Yossi, who's arguing with him, doesn't know what Rabbi Yehuda said. And that machlokas that we saw between the Tosfot Ari and the Rashbam, about whether Rabbi Yehuda or Rav Nachman in interpreting Rabbi Yehuda says, oh, I thought it was, the Mishnah sounded like Zman HaSheni, really means Zman HaRishon we learn from the Braisa, or does the Mishnah mean Zman HaRishon? You could see why there could be, in the Mishnah, it's unclear, and why you could possibly read it either way. Just like here in the Braisa, Rabbi Yossi is unclear as to Rabbi Yehuda's position, and he's trying, goes, either way, I argue on you, but I just don't know what you said. And here, I mean, the Gemara now has conclusive that he did say Mizman HaRishon. But that was unclear, at least in the time that he first gave his opinion, or when Rabbi Yossi heard his opinion. Now, Tana Rabbanan, Shtar Shizmano Katuv B'Shabbat or B'Asara B'Tishrei. If a shtar that's dated either on Shabbos or on the 10th of Tishrei, which is Yom HaKippurim. So now, Shtar Me'ucharhu. It is a shtar meuchar automatically, v'kasher, and it's not a problem, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Yehuda's basic premise is that you couldn't have written the shtar on Shabbos or Yom HaKippurim. So the fact that it's documented of those dates is clearly a shtar that was delayed, was written after the fact. And that they wrote it later on, and they had put that date on it. Alright, so Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi posel. Rabbi Yossi says that it is pasul. He says, Amar lo Rabbi Yehuda, alo maseh bala fenecha b'tzipori. Wasn't there a case like this in Tzipori? And you said it was kasher. So why are you arguing on me now and saying it's pasul? I'm a look, she'achsharti, bazeh, yachsharti. When I was machshir, it was exactly this case that I was machshir. So now, v'har Rabbi Yehuda, nami bazeh kamar. Rabbi Yehuda and our mission is also talking about this type of case. What does it mean, bazeh? Bazeh is when the date is clearly a date that you couldn't, right, writ the shtar. So that's, it's if, we're looking at it, it's if the shtar is written in it, the transaction did not happen today, we are just writing this date in it, and it's going to be a delayed date. This is a shtar meuchar by definition. So that if Rabbi Yossi agrees, when it's obvious that the shtar wasn't written today, for instance, when the date clearly states that there's no writing today, but you couldn't have done that today. Oh, so very good. That's what I will have to address. How does this happen? How does it happen like this? So here we have a date, or we think the date is Shabbos Yom Kippur, couldn't have written it. We automatically assume the shtar is clearly not written today. It must be a shtar mukhar. Even Rabbi Yossi agrees to that. But here in our braisa, which we just quoted, Rabbi Yossi argues in Rabbi Yehuda. And what was the case of Rabbi Yehuda? The case of Rabbi Yehuda was Shabbos and Yom Kippurim. So why is Rabbi Yossi arguing there? So he says, Amar Rabbi Tata Komodim, Shims Kaknulo Unato Shel Shtar, Vinim Seita Unato Mekuvenet, Bishabbat, O Basra B'Tishrei, Shashtar Meucharhu V'Kasher. Everybody agrees that if we have to figure out the date, and based on figuring out the date, it lands on Shabbos or Yom HaKippurim, then clearly the Shtar is Meuchar and Kasher. Lo Nechloku El B'Shtar Meuchar Be'Alma. The Machlokus relates to a regular Shtar Be'Alma, which has a weekday date on it that could have been written on a date. That's when we argue about it. So now, let's understand. The first question is, how do you have a Shtar where it's written in it Yom HaKippurim, or that's written in it Shabbos? Meaning that, how do they do this? What exactly is in the shtar? If it says it in the shtar that it's Shabbos or that it's Yom HaKippurim, then what is this? Huskakno lo nato. We look up the date and all of a sudden we found that it was Shabbos. Why do you have to look it up? It says Shabbos in it. It says Yom HaKippurim in it. What's the question about what's written in the shtar? So the Rishbam claims that the shtar is dated based on the secular dates. The shtar is written with secular dates in it, and then we go and look. We look up the calendar, and we look at the secular date, and the secular date turns out to be Shabbos or Yom HaKippurim. Turns out to be Yud Tishrei or a Shabbos. So the reason that it's not obvious, or that maybe even the dating, so that when they dated it, they didn't realize it was Shabbos or Yom HaKippurim maybe, is that they were using a secular date over here. And because they were looking at a secular date, that's what caused the confusion, and that's why we are looking at this now and saying, okay, how do we deal with this shtar that now is written on Yom HaKippurim or supposedly written on Shabbos? So we say, okay, it wasn't written then. It was clearly that it was the dating is Mukhar. Why not Mukdam? Why not? Right? Gabriel was asking, why not Mukdam? Why do you have to say Mukhar? So that the Rashbam quotes the Rabbeinu Chananel. He says, V'alekha lameimar Hashem Mukdam hu pasul k'mo sheperish Rabbeinu Chananel. Right? He says, because we saw from our Mishnah or in other places, anytime we have any question about the dating in a contract, we automatically assume that the dating is misdated and delayed. He says that we have proof from that, from the Mishnayot in Sanhedrin, from the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that there's no question that we automatically assume that nobody would write a shtar mukdam, because a shtar mukdam is pasul, and so that if they did date it this way, they're clearly trying to do a shtar me'uchar, and that's the only conclusion, even if we have a safek. Whenever we have a safek, we're just going to go in that direction and say that it was a shtar mukhar. The underlying assumption is people don't write shtarot muzyafim, they don't write false shtarot, forged shtarot, and they don't write a shtar mukdam, which is going to be pasul. So we assume that the shtar is kasher. By assuming that the shtar is kasher, the only way to explain it is to say it was a shtar miuchar.
I have a better answer. That they wrote it, for instance, they wrote it on Mutzei
Shabbat. That's right. I asked the same thing. When I was learning yesterday, I said that the Rashbam's solution is a difficult solution because of that. I mean, the Rashbam automatically assumes that the secular date and the lunar, the Jewish date, run on the same time frame. This happens all the time, where you can have, you know, meaning that there's a machzor. Machzor is 19 years. Everybody says your birthday will fall out, your Hebrew and secular birthday will fall out on the same day every 19 years because of the machzor. That's only true if you were born in the daytime. Right. If you are born at night, right, before Chatzot, if you're born before midnight at night, you'll have a problem because it's the same one secular date, the Hebrew date's already the next day. And then you're on your 19th year, you'll have the same thing, which is that your date, you'll be off by one day. But that's exactly what you're raising, is the problem. It could be Motzei Shabbat, it could be Motzei Yom HaKippurim. You could have a secular date that doesn't match. The Rashbam doesn't address that. It's interesting. I don't know, that was my first question on the Rashbam. It also says that they use some sort of ambiguous dating over here. He has to come up. He says, don't say that they were not Bikim B'Kviyah D'Yarcha. That's what I mean. You could ask, listen, they made a mistake. Why is it written Yom HaKippurim on it? Because they thought that it was a Chodesh Mubar, and then they wrote the date. Oh, so they didn't write Yud B'Tishrei. That you have to say over here, is that they didn't write either Yud B'Tishrei. What they wrote is, it's the second Shabbos, or the second week in the month of Tishrei of this year. And they used a term that didn't give a date, but rather just defined the time period. Like it's the first Monday in, you know, or the first this and this day.
It's the second.
Alright, so Shabbos is going to be harder, but they use it as the second Monday in Tishrei. You look up the second Monday in Tishrei, turns out it's Yom Kippur. So that's one, but that's how you do it. By Shabbos, you have to say basically that they wrote a date, that says that it's 2 weeks after this, or something like that, on Gimel B'Nisan, and they say Gimel B'Nisan, it was on Thursday, it was 2 weeks after that. You look up to Gimel B'Nisan, it wasn't on a Thursday, it was on a Shabbos. So now they say 2 weeks after Gimel B'Nisan, it's really Shabbos. Yeah, something that created, there was some sort of ability to not, when they dated it, not see that it was Shabbos, and only later on, when you go to investigate the dating, you see that it's Shabbos. That's how Tosfos explains it. Tosfos might have been bothered. The question is, if Tosfos was bothered by the Rashbam, but this problem with the secular versus the Hebrew date, and that's why he kept it within the Hebrew calendar, there's some mistake within the Hebrew calendar, there's some writing that happens. So now we have on the top of the next Talmud, the Machlokas is like this, the Rav Yehuda Lutame. Yehuda says to his reasoning, Damar ain kotvim shovar, v'lo ma'anafik min echorba. That we don't write any receipts, so there's no problem. A shtar mukhar is totally fine, because we don't write receipts. If we don't write receipts, there can't be any problem. But Rabbi Yossi, we do write receipts. For that will come out a total or a complete problem. Why is that? Because you now have a problem, which is that you have a receipt that could be dated in between the transaction and the shtar. If you write a shtar me'uchar, if it's post-dated, the shtar, then what happens, for instance, you come around Nisan, person borrows money in Nisan. He repays the money in Sivan, but when they wrote the shtar, they post-dated it to Tishrei. So now they come to court, the creditor comes to court and says, you owe me money. He says, I paid it back, here's my receipt. Takes out the receipt says Sivan on it. He says, sorry, the contract says Tishrei, you borrowed after that. That might have been for something else, but the contract that I have is after the shofar, the receipt that you have. So the possibility of that problem arising for Rabbi Yossi is because we write receipts. If we write receipts, post-dating the shtar could open up a huge problem of anything that happens between the actual transaction and the post-dating of the shtar. So anything, if there was any repayment during that period of time, that could cause huge issues for the debtor. So therefore, Rabbi Yossi says, no shtar meuchar, unless it's specifically dated, post-dated where in a way that we know it was post-dated. If we know it's post-dated, we know to look into this issue. So if it's written in Yom Kippur and Shabbos, and then the guy comes with the receipt that says Sivan, and he says, no, the date is Tishrei, we say, wait, it says, it's Yom Tishrei, it's Yom Kippur. If it's Yom Kippur, we know it's a post-dated shtar. Let's look into when the transaction really happened. And then they'll know to deal with the issue of it being a post-dated shtar. But if they don't know it's a post-dated shtar, the person will start up, it will come to court, and it'll just show them a shtar who says it's post-dated. They'll just say the shtar was written today, and that's when the transaction happened. We have no way of knowing or questioning him about that issue. So that's why Rabbi Yossi agrees when it's clear it's a post-dated shtar. When it's unclear that it's a post-dated shtar, he says no way because of the risk of the receipt being written in between the transaction and the post-dated shtar. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't allow a shofar. Rabbi Yehuda says you rip up the contract. If you always rip up the contract, there's no problem if you repay the money. If you repay the money, we always wrote you a new contract from the original date. If we wrote you a new contract from the original date, there's nothing to discuss over here. Right now, the Gemara says, Amar Rav Huna b'rei Rabbi Yeshua, afilu l'man da'amar kotvim shofar, ani mile al palga. That's only, you only write receipts when there's I think palga here doesn't mean 50%. I think palga means a partial repayment. As long as there's a partial repayment, then we use receipts. Avala kule lo. That on a full amount, meaning if he repays the entire thing, rip up the shtar. Says, very lohi. The Gemara says that's not the case. Afilu akule kadvinan. Even on the entire shtar, we will write a shofar. So again, a similar case. We had this case before that Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Yosef was a creditor to Rabbi Ava. Last time they went before Rabbi Yitzchok Nafkot, this time they end up in front of Rabbi Chanina Bar Papi. It's interesting that it sounds like this, I don't know if this is the same loan, but it sounds like that they had previous altercations in their lending, and the fact that he lent to him again is interesting. Right, this time they end up in Rabbi Chanina Bar Papi. Relationship is not exactly one of right the best relationship, and yet they're still lending money. Again, LMK, you say it was one loan, and the multiple problems came up in this same loan. But Rabbi says, give me my money back, please. I want to be repaid. I want my shtar back. And then I'll repay you. I'm not paying you till I get the document, otherwise you're going to claim from me again. He says, your shtar was ripped up. I don't have it anymore. So, I'll write for your receipt. Rabbi Shmuel will say, you don't write a shofar, I'm not going to accept the receipt over here. You show up with the shtar, I pay you. You don't show up with the shtar, nothing doing. I'm not going to write you a shofar. No receipts. Rabbi Shmuel say, no receipts. Zamar, man, Yehevlan, me afraid, Rabbi Shmuel, Raminon, Bainin, who will give us from the dirt of Rabbi Shmuel and Shmuel the place in our eyes? The Rabbeinu Gershom reads this as some sort of compliment. You know, the memrot of Rabbi Shmuel are so dear to us. And he reads, Hi, the mighty Raya mi Rabbi Shmuel, kolkach hayu chavivin aleinu. They're so beloved to us. The man yavle me afrayu, mal yinayin minayu, we'll give from their dust, meaning their words, and we'll fill our eyes with them. Mi rov chavivut, from the great love. Here it's the dirt here, but in the placing in our eyes, it's not in a negative sense that we're covering up, but rather, we'd love to hear the words of Shmuel. There's only one problem. Says, I'd love to hear the words of Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish disagree with them. And they say, you do write a shofar. That we do write receipts. So if you write a receipt, I want my money, pay me back, and I'll give you a receipt. That the Svara dictates that you do write a receipt. Why? If you think that we don't write a shofar, then avad shtaro shozeh yochal alove v'chadi. So this is Gabriel's question yesterday. Why should the malveh lose over here? Right? Meaning, why should the malveh lose when he loses the shtar? We say, okay, the loveh is going to lose the shofar, and he's going to lose out. So let's, okay, fine. So the loveh loses out. But now the other way around, you have the malveh is going to have to be obligated to keep his shtar. If he loses his shtar, he's going to lose out. So that's exactly what we say here. What happens to the rights of the malveh? What happens to the rights of the creditor? If he loses the shtar, he's going to lose everything. We don't want that to happen. So that's why we say, okay, write a shofar. You write a shofar, then he doesn't have to show up the shtar. If he doesn't have the shtar, he can write a merseit. So matkif le'abaye, elamai, kodvin shofar. Right, so if Rabbi says, what do you mean you write a receipt? Avad shovro shozeh yochal alach ad v'chadi? Alright, so your claim is that if the malveh loses the shtar, he's going to lose all his money. So what, now the debtor ends up not having to repay and he's going to be dancing in the streets because the malveh lost the shtar and he doesn't have to repay the money, meaning that he's basically taking money that doesn't belong to him and he's going to celebrate about that? Well, what about the other way around? If we write a receipt and the malveh loses the receipt, so the malveh shows up with the contract and says, you owe me all the money. So what now? We're going to allow the malveh to have that power where he can show up and collect again the full amount, and he's going to be taking money that does not belong to him, and we're going to let him eat the loveh's money and be, you know, happy and excited and celebrate that. So he says, "I'm Amalei Rava in." Yes, you know why? Eved loveh the ish malveh. That's what we discussed earlier. That the loveh does not have the upper hand here. The malveh has the upper hand. The creditor has the upper hand, and we're going to put the obligation or the burden on one of the two to deal with a document. It's going to be the loveh. Keep your document, otherwise you're going to be in trouble. So who, if we have to choose between the malveh and the loveh, we're going to choose the loveh because the loveh is disadvantaged in this case. No, but here he says, here, because if he has it, there's no shaila. If he has it, then we'll rip up the contract. Point is, if he shows up and he says, avadli or ikasli, then we have a problem, because then he can't rip up the shtar. So now the question is, does he get nothing? Does he not get repaid? Or does he get repaid with a shofar? And the Gemara's conclusion here is that he gets repaid with the shofar, and the obligation will be on the loveh to keep it. Of course, no, the loveh is agreeing over here that there was a loan. That's the only question, does he need a shtar to claim? Why, what are we afraid of? That he's not telling the truth, that he lost the shtar. And so then he'll wait it out a little while, wait 3-4 years, the loveh will lose the receipt, and then all of a sudden, you know, say you have to return something to the store, you have to look for the receipt. It's gone within, like, if you have to wait 2 weeks, in 3 weeks, you have to find the receipt, you can never find the receipt. So like I said, if you wait 3-4 years, he's not going to have the receipt anywhere. He's not going to have the file cabinet that he has a receipt in. He doesn't have the receipt after 3-4 years. He's not going to have it. And then he'll take out the shtar again. He'll say, listen, you owe me the money. You never repaid me. So there we say, we protect the malveh gets the upper hand over here. Tznan hatam. We have a Mishnah. Shtar chov hamukdamim. We have a shtar mukdam. Pasul. Ve'amuchar. A post-dated shtar is kasher. It's clearly according to the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. That is because we're talking about a shtar mukhar is kasher. So now, what shtar mukdam can manifest itself in two ways. This is what we discussed before. A shtar mukdam can be predated for two reasons. One, it can be predated in the sense that the transaction took place, let's say, on Yud Nisan, and they're standing here, and then they write a shtar for Echad B'Nisan. I mean, it's completely and totally false. They're writing a shtar that's predating the actual transaction, that sets the transaction back to Aleph Nisan, and even though the transaction took place on Yud Nisan. That's one type of shtar mukdam. The other type of shtar mukdam is that we're sitting on, Rosh Chodesh Iyar. And then we write a shtar that says the transaction took place on Yud Nisan. It's also a shtar mukdam, you're predating the shtar, but it happens to be that it's truthful. It is telling the truth because the transaction did take place on Yud Nisan.
Writing the shtar was later.
Right, writing the shtar was later. Meaning that, or there's one other possibility, which is almost a similar type of possibility as this one, which is that you have a shtar mukdam, which is that you wrote the shtar on Yud Nisan, so that the dating is correct, but the transaction only took place on the 30th of Nisan. The transaction only took place much later on. So there are different ways you could have a shtar mukdam. A shtar mukdam could come up. Some of them are not really. The question is, are they all of them problematic, or is just some of them problematic? Says that the Rishvam here discusses, he says, Hamukdamim Psulim, it's the first wide line there, the first very, very wide line. He says, Shkadvua Bechad Biyar, Toch Hashar Yikdimu Bechadvua Bechad Misan. Here they predated the Shtar, the transaction was on the first of the year, and they write that it happened on the first of Nisan. If you skip down a line, like the last three words, he says, Hamukdamim Binyan Shdesh, Nichtavu Bechad Misan, Ubechad Misan Kadvua, Velolavad Tishrei. What happens if they wrote it, and the date in it is correct, but they only lend it out later on? I mean, the transaction, it happens after the writing of the shtar. So it's over there, b'zeh nechluku b'perek shnayim uchzim. That is a machlokas. Rav Ashi mukila b'shtari haknah. That's only b'shtari haknah, where the kinyan happened right away, or that it's only, I'm sorry, there it's only a shtar rayo, and it's not the kinyan itself. Which as we've seen before, Abaye's opinion is that as soon as you sign the document, the shibud begins. Even though the shibud or the transactional interval is later, the shibud starts from the time that they deem sign into the shtar. They sign into the shtar, the shibud begins from then. So it's not untruthful in that sense that he predated it. So here, to be l'kuli alma, let's assume that the predating of the shtar is a false predating of the shtar, so that the transaction happened on Echad B'Iyar, Rosh Chodesh Iyar, and they're predating the shtar to Echad B'Nisan, and they're writing the shtar on Echad B'Iyar. Right? That makes it, that's a shtar mukdam. This is only true by loan documents. But when it comes to transactional documents, even if you delay them, it's pasul. My time, so let's hear the case. Zimnin mizamin le'arob is Nisan. He sells him land in Nisan. But he writes in it that it was sold in Tishrei. And the seller comes into some money. Maybe he inherits some money, something happens, he gets a good business deal, he makes some money in between. And now he buys, what does he do? He buys back the property that he sold. Comes around to Tishrei and he says, listen, pulls out the contract and says, he shows up, all right, we had a transaction together. He goes, I have a document that I bought it back from you. He says, yeah, you did buy it back from me. But I have another document that says you sold it back to me again, a second time. Because he has the post-dated shtar. Somebody says, okay, if that's true, yohi shtar yalval nami. What's the difference with shtar yalval? You have the same problem. Zimna diyozip in Nisan, you'll borrow in Nisan, you'll chtiv le shtar be Tishrei, and they'll post-date the shtar to Tishrei. Tomorrow they zuzei beni, he'll part of it. And he'll pay him back in the interim. He has money, pays him back. He says, give me my shtar. It's ripped up. I don't have it. He'll write for him a shofar. And when the time comes, he's going to take out that shtar and say, listen, yes, you did pay it back. But I lent you money again in Tishrei. Right, it's after that point in time. You bought it from me now at the current time. So he says, Kasavar ain't kotvim shofar. He holds like Rabbi Huda that you're not kotev a shofar. If you don't write a shofar, you're not going to have this problem. Because you always rip up the shtar. When you rip up the shtar and write the new shtar, it doesn't matter that it's dated. It'll always be dated back to the Zman Rishon, number one. Number two, it'll only have the amount that he really owes him at this point in time. So if you were sover like Rabbi Huda that ain't kotvin shofar, then it will be true that you can, with a loan, write a shtar mukhar and it would not be pasul. But b'shtar mekach u'memkar, it will be pasul. So now, this next discussion in the Gemara is amazing. It says, Amalei Rav Yemar, the Rav Kana, Amalei Rav Yemar, Yabidifte Rav Kana, Vayidna. Today, the Katvina and Shtarim U'acharim, we do write Shtarim U'acharim, but Katvin Tovra. We write post-dated Shtarot, and we write receipts. So now, what are you going to do? Right? Meaning that we do exactly what the problem raised by the Gemara is. We do post-dated Shtarot, and we do Shovarim. We write receipts. So now you're going to run into a problem where someone's at risk. So he said, but the Amar Lahu Rabbi Abba the Safrei. Now, after we knew about this, that these two issues were happening, that people were writing post-dated shtarot, and we write shovarim, then Rabbi Abba instructed his sofrim, ki katvinu shtarim u'charei, whenever you write a post-dated shtar, katvu hachi, you have to write in the shtar like this, shtar denan, lo bezimnei katvinei, el achrunu ava katvinua. Put an explicit statement within the shtar that says it's a post-dated shtar. Then we don't have a problem. Once we know it's a post-dated shtar, it's easy now, because even if he comes to Tishrei and says, you lent me now, we know that it's a post-dated shtar. Let's figure out when it really happened. So they have to include in the shtar the explicit statement that it's post-dated. So now you're talking about post-dated shtar, we don't worry about it, because then the shofar will be fine, because we'll look into the issue. So now, I'm a lay Rav Asher of Kana, right? V'hayidna, delo kavdin and hachi. We don't write that into the shtar. Right? So now, bata damar lay Rav Safra Safrei. So now, what do we do? Alright, so he says, we don't do this. So we now write shovarim, we write receipts, we write shtarot amukharim, right? And we don't mention in the shtar that it's mukhar. So what are we doing today? So he says, okay, I'll tell you what. Kikadvinu hane tavre, when we write a shovar, iyaditu zimna dishtara kadvo. If we know the date in the shtar, then we write the date of the shtar. He paid back the money. We say he paid back of the shtar that has this and this date in it. So that's if we know it. Ilo, if we do not know the date, katvu stama. You write a receipt that is not dated that says kol ema denafik libra'e. That anytime he takes out a shtar on him, he can just whip the receipt out because the receipt's not dated. So we give him an undated receipt to protect him. So again, if we know the date of the shtar, because our fear is what? He says, Irkas, Avadli, the shtar is not here, write me a receipt. So now you're going to write him a receipt for the current date. And then he'll whip out the shtar was Mukhar, which will be after the receipt date, then he'll be at risk. So say no. If the shtar is in front of us and we know the date, if it's a shtar Mukhar or if it's a shtar Mukdam, we write down whatever the shtar is, we write the date. So now the shofar always matches the date of the shtar and he can't whip it out on him. Now, if he says Irkas or Avadli and we're going to write him a receipt, we don't know the date. He says, oh no, the transaction was back in Nisan. We say, well, where's the shtar that says that? We don't have it. So we write him a shofar that says, you have a receipt that he repaid 500 shekel, period. No date, nothing. That means if he whips it out in Tishrei, he'll take out the receipt. Right, it still matches him, so he can't get away with it. So now he says, Amar le Ravina the Ravashi, Ravina Ravashi, Rav Kahana, Vaidna Dilokab Dinan Hochi. And we don't do that either. I said, this is like an amazing Gemara, that they had all these, right, exactly, they have all these solutions, and that they're just not taking up all the solutions. He says, Amar le, so this is the greatest, and this is what I understand. This should have been the answer all the way along. He says, Amar le, Rabbanan Tikune Tikune, right, the Rabbanan established how to do it properly, and how to protect the parties here, right? Manda Ovid Ovid, whoever does it is protected. Manda lo Ovid, Ihud Afsid Anafshe, right? I mean, that should have been the answer, I think, all the way along. That is, you know, if we have a way to protect you, we establish how to protect you. If you use it, right, exactly, if you use the vehicle to protect yourself, then very good, then you're all set. If you choose to ignore us, then that's fine, that you put yourself at risk. If you put yourself at risk, then you can lose out. We set up a system that protects you. If you don't want to take advantage of that system, that's your problem. Just two quick points here that we should add is, number one, as the Rashbam points out over here, that if we do write such a receipt, this open-ended receipt that doesn't have a date, that the malveh has to be very careful not to lend to the same debtor again. The creditor can't lend to the same debtor again, because then he'll be at risk for that shofar. So he has to keep in mind that if he lends them to again, he shouldn't lend the exact same amount of money, but should do something to differentiate it so that the shofar will not be taken out on him. So that's one thing that we have to say. The second thing is, what's the difference? Again, if we have the ability by halvah, we can say, ein kotvin shofar. By halvah, we can say, you don't write a shofar. Why? Because the debtor can say to the creditor, listen, you give me the shtar, and I'll give you your money back. You don't give me the shtar, you don't get your money back. So there's an incentive for the creditor to give the document back in order to get his money. That's not true by Mecha Chumemkar. By Mecha Chumemkar, what's the person, the seller, going to do? He's going to come back and say, listen, if you give me the shtar back, I'll redeem my property. If you don't give me the shtar back, I'm not going to redeem my property. You know what the buyer will say? Don't redeem your property. I'll keep it. He has no incentive over here to give the shtar back to the individual, to the original seller, and therefore he can demand of the seller to give a shofar, to give a receipt. So it depends who has the power here. In the sense, the debtor has the power in the repayment because he can demand from the creditor the document and then he won't repay. And therefore he has the upper hand, he has the ability to demand it and say, I won't accept the receipt. By Mecha Chumemkar, when it's the seller who wants his property back, he does not have the upper hand here. And since he doesn't have the upper hand, he can't make a demand on the buyer to give him the contract back before he will redeem the property. Because the buyer will say to him, don't redeem the property. I'm very happy the way I am. I'm going to keep the land. That's what I wanted. You don't have to redeem it. So the buyer basically could force the seller to take a receipt and not get the contract back in order to redeem his land. And so because of that, that's what the Rebbeinu Gershom says, we actually come out with a different din by a loveh versus Mecha Chumemkar. Not because, you could say the same thing by Mecha Chumemkar, in kotvim shofar. The answer is you can't say that by Mecha Chumemkar. By loans, you can say it because the debtor has the power to say that or to basically extract the shtar from the malveh. That's not true by Mecha Chumemkar, where the redeemer of the property doesn't have that power. And therefore, we will always have the problem that a shofar could be written in Mecha Chumemkar. Okay, we'll stop over there.